This, as you all know, is the fundamentals course for those of you who are going to view this remotely in the future. It's aimed at young lawyers or those who are new to the practice of law. But of course, several of us who need a refresher or just want to see some of our colleagues present, attend this from time to time. So I'm going to keep my comments in line with sort of the basics introductory level. But we are going to broach some topics that do get pretty advanced pretty quickly. So I think this will be a nice topic for people across all parts of their professional spectrum. The conveyance topic is a perennial favorite. It's one that's worth repeating every year or so, and we do every other year or so. But in light of some of that, you know, I made what was not a joke about the talent of Professors Rigetti and Hall. We have some truly awesome talent on the program this year, today and tomorrow, in there at a Smith Conference. So given that so many of those fine folks are focusing their entire presentations on topics that address several facets of the broader sort of conveyance best practices, I'm going to focus some on some of the less often covered topics in an effort to ensure that you leave here today with as little duplication as possible in our remarks. And so while I will point out the places in my presentation where a more fulsome exegesis might be found in the remarks of others in today's program, I will cover all of the basics, and I'll really zero in on some of the nuances, like the Electronic Transactions Act, the tie-in statutes thereof that can result in a party binding itself to an agreement, and a reluctant party might otherwise hope to render that void under the statute of frauds and say, well, wait, that's not a writing, that's not going to work. I'll talk about fixed versus floating royalties and the pitfalls in drafting your conveyances to make sure that the interest that you're conveying or the interest that you're being conveyed is in fact what you understand it to be. I have the honor of talking about everybody's favorite recurring nightmare. We'll cover the rule against perpetuities. So for those of you lawyers who are newly christened and just out of law school, I'm sorry. I know you. It's probably too soon. And then for those of you who have been out a while, it's the Michael Corleone. They keep pulling me back in. You can't get away. No rule against Shelley's case. Don't worry. We're not going to get too arcane today. But we will talk about the rule against perpetuities. The Texas Supreme Court has really had some interesting decisions over the past couple of years that have, I won't say gutted the rule against perpetuities, but they've certainly found ways to breathe life into things that might, strictly speaking, otherwise have been struck down. And then finally, we'll talk about, depending on your perspective, is either a disturbing trend or is a fantastic development in Texas oil and gas law jurisprudence and the Texas Supreme Court's willingness to look to the four corners of the document to divine the intent of the parties. We'll figure out, I hope, what they mean by how to plainly express the party's intent. It sounds simple, and it is simple, but it robs us all of one of our favorite pastimes of sitting around the Thanksgiving table with our friends and relatives and using lots of legalese. Another firm here in Houston, to give a shameless commercial for someone else, which I think is allowed since it's not us. There was a firm here in Houston that at least a few years ago had a tagline that was "Straight talk is good business." I always really liked that tagline because it's true. And I think in light of some of the Supreme Court's recent cases on the subject to clause, the two grant theory, and some of the conveyances that they've reviewed pretty closely, I think that they were probably righter than they thought they were when they coined that phrase. Straight talk is good business. And I think clever attempts to disguise a grant or to camouflage it as something that it's not, a wolf in sheep's clothing, maybe. The Supreme Court has shown a real reluctance to allow that to happen. And that's probably on basis, a good thing on balance. But we will talk about some situations where that might be perhaps going a bridge too far. After all, words mean things. Words are the stock and trade that we lawyers have, and we should choose them carefully. But at the same time, when we do choose them carefully, or when the parties do come to an understanding that maybe a couple years later, one of them begins to regret, everyone gets that sort of buyer's remorse or maybe seller's remorse, we want to make sure we don't open the door to second guessing, not just because it creates litigation and because no one wants to see their name, I suppose, on the front of any of the legal trade publications, unless it's a great announcement about being promoted to some prestigious position. No one wants to see, something I drafted is now in controversy with a huge amount of money. And what again was my E&O carrier's phone number? Do I need to call them? So we'll try to keep you out of that situation. Let's start at the beginning. Seems like a good place to start. We're going to give sort of an overview of several facets of the conveyancing process. We're going to start, as you can see, I promise not to read to you in today's presentation. So I'll sort of use the PowerPoints as an outline rather than a script. But you can see what we'll cover there. We'll start with the basics. We'll start about, you know, what has to be in writing and why does it have to be in writing. We'll talk about once we're in writing, once we've reduced something to a writing, what happens if we don't record it? Where do we record it? What effect does recording it have? How do we make it stick, if you will? And we'll talk a little bit there about something called e-contracts. Now that might be, I'm not talking blockchain, right? This is something a little different and I think overlooked despite the fact that it's been codified in Texas for 20 years now. But I still find people all the time who are surprised to find that there's something called an e-contract. And we'll talk about whether that would satisfy the statute of frauds. We said it had to be in writing. And not, you know, our electrons on your screen writing. We'll talk about that. Joint operating agreements will be covered once again by one of this afternoon's speakers. I'm not going to steal his thunder too much, but we do have to talk a little bit about as a joint operating agreement and as pooling creates sort of a cross conveyance and joinder. And we're not going to go that deep into real property theory. Don't worry. But there's a conveyance implicit in that, and especially to protect your interest. There's a recording statement that goes along with the JOA. And so while I won't dig too much into the meat and potatoes of the JOA itself, once again, that'll be better covered this afternoon. Mr. Curry, I think, is going to handle that in today's last presentation. So whoever I angered being between Tara and Keith, at least I don't have to go last. Kudos to him for doing that. So I won't punish him by saying everything that he would say. I'll keep my remarks hopefully different from what he'll cover this afternoon.